We're back. We didn't get kicked off the air. And just like last week, we are going to be live on Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. College hoops is happening. It has been an insane week, including a dethroning of the number one team in the country, the team that we gassed up all last week. Michelle, how are we doing tonight?
Elijah, it's good to be here. It's also so nice that it is 6 o'clock in Nashville, and it is not that dark out yet. It was so nice driving here and realizing, you know what? The sun is not fully down yet. It's getting warmer. Basketball's heating up. It is just a good time to be alive, Elijah.
It is, and just think, in like, what, 37 or 38 days? I forgot what the count is, but it's in that range that daylight savings time comes back again, and you know it won't be like 4 o'clock whenever it gets dark.
Oop, I muted myself there. Yeah.
Joe Rex Road.
Full Joe right there moment. No, it's amazing because then I'm not napping at 4 o'clock and then waking up, eating dinner, and then going back to bed. Or waking up, eating dinner, watching basketball, and then going back to bed.
See, the watching basketball part, that's the most important thing here. And of course, I think the first thing we're going to obviously touch on is Auburn, another number one going down, this time to Arkansas. And I don't know if I've seen a better, I guess, what's the word, atmosphere in college basketball this year than what Arkansas had for Auburn when they came to town.
First off, absolutely an insane environment in Arkansas. And if you have not watched this game, all you need to see is the last play of the game. There's probably 4 seconds on the clock. They throw it full court. One of the Arkansas players is basically waiting at the other end of the basket, just goes up, dunks the ball. As soon as he does that, the buzzer goes off, then everybody storms the court.
Fireworks go off.
It is the most aesthetically pleasing thing. The only thing that would have made this better is if it was the national championship or something.
Oh, my God.
But yeah. I remember just watching that, and my jaw dropped because the timing of everything was absolutely perfect.
Perfect.
And It was just so, like, pleasing. And, of course, you love to see the underdog team win. Auburn hasn't even lost a game in the SEC yet. This is their first loss in the SEC, second loss of the season. So, and it went into overtime. So, just very exciting for that Arkansas team. And their coach is in a sling, and he just rips his shirt off, and it's just in the middle.
Eric Musselman's a wild man. That is a wild, wild man. No one gets hype like Eric Musselman gets hype.
Yeah. I think in the post game, too, there was one, not the normal post game about the game, but there was another interview, and he's just in the middle of the crowd with his shirt off. I'm like, you know what? You earned it. You earned it after that performance. But I will say, we have talked about Auburn since the beginning, and I actually had Auburn as my top – I think they were in my top 10 when we did our AP polls, and we even talked about this off the air a little bit. We haven't seen what we've been looking for from Auburn yet this year, and – we said, you know, they're going to be a top team in the SEC. They're going to be a team that could make a run in the tournament because they had so many transfers and older guys on the team with a lot of experience, but we just hadn't seen it click like we've been waiting for. And then, I mean, the other night, they could have beat any team in college basketball the way they played.
They could. And you mentioned the transfers, too. Like, Stanley and Moody, especially, is a player who didn't play major college basketball. Like, he's now into the Power Five. You know, he's playing in the Summit League last year, and the guy is now in the SEC. That's a big jump. A lot of their key contributors are guys that they got from other schools. Chris Likes is another player who played in the ACC, but it's a lot different coming to the SEC. Audie's Tony playing at Pittsburgh, obviously playing in more competitive basketball now than he ever did. When you bring all these transfers in, like, it takes a little while, right? Like, I said the same thing about Texas. Like, how you felt about Arkansas, I felt about Texas, because Texas had all these, like, all-star transfers. And in a way, they're kind of in the same boat. Like, Texas is playing their best ball at the right time. Arkansas is playing their best ball at the right time. And it took a little while. Like, it's been a journey, Michelle, for this Arkansas team. Like, some of the losses are pretty brutal. I mean, Oklahoma, who is a bubble team, beat them by 22 in December. Hofstra beat them by 8. I can't do math. Hofstra beat them by 8 early in the year. Hofstra's not a tournament team by any stretch of the imagination. That is not a very good basketball team. And then they turn around and start off the SEC SEC play, losing their first three. Mississippi State's a solid team, but Mississippi State beat them really good. They lost to Vanderbilt at home. Even though Vanderbilt's playing better, it's still a bad loss. And then I'm not high on Texas A&M at all, but Texas A&M took care of Arkansas, and Arkansas went 0-3 in SEC play. And since then, done nothing but win. They've won nine straight since then. And some of those wins are against, like you said, number one Auburn. They have a big win against LSU. They took care of business against West Virginia in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. And, oh, they avenged that loss to Mississippi State and did it on the road. So this is a team where it's starting to click right now, and everything we thought Arkansas would be at the beginning of the year is starting to show a little bit here in February when it really, really matters.
Well, and that is the key point right there is what you said. We can talk all about the beginning of the year. You know, they lost to Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, but then they beat Mississippi State, and then they've been on a roll since those losses, and this is when it matters. I mean, well, actually, March is when it matters, but you want to be playing
your best going into
your
it.
Your best going into March once you get seeded, because seeding is so important once we hit the tournament. We were just talking about it. It can be, I mean, it's just your matchups. You know, you get, if you are a higher seed, then you get to play a lower seed. It's easy math. Everybody can figure that out. I mean, then again, it is March Madness, so it doesn't matter. A 16 seed could beat you.
It's happened once.
The principle of it is it should be an easier ride for you. But I think this Arkansas team, I really like the way they are playing. And, hey, they could win the SEC. We talked about this last week. There are so many teams in the SEC. I mean, Auburn has dominated, but they almost lost to Missouri
the other day. They played a lot of close
games. They almost lost to Georgia the other day. They just lost to Arkansas. Those were their last three games. Mm-hmm. Kentucky might have beat them if they had. So, obviously, this Auburn team, I mean, the way they're playing with Kessler, Jabari Smith, they are a number one team in, caliber team in the country. But this is college basketball. You know, all these teams are elite. And the crown is heavy. I say this every time. Auburn, the crown is heavy. They almost lost it last week. And Arkansas took them down this week.
I'd say with Auburn, too, is they've played with fire a lot. And that's one thing. They became number one, and they barely beat Missouri. Missouri is a horrific team, which it's funny. One of my favorite stats in college basketball this year is it came from that game where Auburn shot 30% from the field in that game and still won, which is a testament to how bad Missouri is. I mean, if they weren't playing Missouri, they're losing that game. They escaped that game, one-point win. They beat Oklahoma pretty good, beat Alabama really good. And that was when we came in here and said, hey, this team is legit. You know, they hung 100 on a Nate Oates-coached Alabama team. That is not an easy feat. And then they only beat Georgia by two. Georgia, the worst team in the SEC. I'd say Missouri is just slightly better. It's not by much. We're really splitting hairs there. But really only beat Georgia by two on the road. It took a layup with 3 seconds left to do it. And then, of course, they get into another close game with Arkansas. So my question to you is, do you think that this Auburn team maybe is a little more flawed than we thought? Or is this just Arkansas taking advantage of them not playing their best and Arkansas actually being a contender to climb up and make a run at the SEC in terms of being a top three or four seed in this tournament?
I think this, Elijah, says a little bit about each team. You know, I think this shows that Arkansas is a team that can hang with the big dogs, and people kind of counted them out early in the season because of these losses that they had that we touched on before. You know, the Mississippi State, the Vanderbilt. But then on the flip side of it, Auburn has been playing at such an elite level and has just had so many consistent wins. They won 19 games in a row. That's insane, especially with college basketball, the quick turnaround. You're playing two games a week. Sometimes you're traveling and you only have one day of rest. On top of that, you're a college student. So the fact that they have been able to win 19 games in a row, they were undefeated in the SEC up until this game, of course. I think Auburn is still an elite-level team, and I think, yeah, of course they're going to be flawed. All teams are going to be flawed in some way. I mean, I think what killed them at the end was Kessler fouling out, so then they don't have the size in there. Mm-hmm. But then you see Jabari Smith, who showed that he is going to be a top NBA pick.
He kept a minute with the shooting.
He kept a minute. I think he hit two threes in the last minute of the game, which allowed Auburn to be even in the game because Arkansas went on a 7-0 run in OT, which had them above them in the end of the game. And Jabari Smith was really the only reason they were able to keep it in the game. And then, you know, Kessler fouls out. So then obviously that hurts them. But another stat line I saw, I can't find the last numbers of it, but Arkansas was able to get to the foul line so much more than
Auburn.
It's
their strength. Their biggest strength.
I mean, I'm going to give an estimate, but I remember seeing it was something like Arkansas was 25 from 28 at the line, and then Auburn was like 14 from 16, or they were in the teens, but then I remember Arkansas being in the high 20s. Now, those are just free baskets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Arkansas almost got 30 points off their foul shots.
That's massive, too. And that's the thing about Auburn, what's a little rare is when I try to think of, like, is this kind of result something we're going to see a lot from either one of these teams? Like, Arkansas is top 25 in the country in free throw rate. Auburn tends to settle sometimes. And sometimes, like, in those possessions, when they settle for jump shots, they're not a fantastic jump shooting team. I mean, they're ranked 247th in the country in three-point shooting. It's not elite. 63rd in two-point field goal percentage, which is good. It's not elite. But when they get to the rim, that's when they're at their best, and they use their size and athleticism, because that's the one thing they have that a lot of teams just don't have in terms of just raw size and athleticism. Purdue offensively is very similar, but Auburn can actually get stops, and that's kind of what separates those two teams a little bit. But when they stop getting aggressive, they start losing games. And I think Coach Bruce Pearl has kind of figured that out, or needs to at least, because that was one of the formulas to this game. They lost the free throw battle, and that's going to be a significant thing for Auburn moving ahead. And speaking of moving ahead, there is some significant SEC basketball played this weekend and next Tuesday. The standings are a lot closer than you might think. There's going to be a lot of movement in these standings moving forward. We'll break that down and more here as you're listening to Courtside with Kamel Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Courtside with Kamel Knezovic rolls along here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Michelle and I just got done breaking down Auburn getting upset by Arkansas. Arkansas trending in a good direction. And Michelle, we forgot to mention this in the last segment. I'm glad you reminded me during the break that the Walton Arena is not necessarily kind to number one teams going into it.
Yes, and I have a little interesting stat I was looking up, Elijah. The one that you're talking about, that is, I need to find the exact wording of that, but I'm going to look that up right after this one. But this one I have, I thought was a nice little nugget to add. So Arkansas's only win in program history against a ranked number one opponent came during the 1983-84 season when it beat the Michael Jordan North Carolina team.
I'd say it's a pretty good team. Team that went far.
I would say Michael Jordan, you know, arguably just one of the best basketball players ever.
He went on to have a pretty relatively successful career, I would say. I'd say he was pretty good. But I think the stat I saw too is that that Arkansas, like, it's like they have a very favorable record at home against number one teams. And I kind of thought that was the one you're alluding to. But like Arkansas at home against number one teams are usually pretty good. Like, obviously it doesn't happen every year, but Arkansas is pretty good against top five ranked teams coming into Arkansas. They don't make it out the same ranking they came in with, that is for sure. Michelle, we have a pretty significant week or so of college basketball here in the SEC. Auburn's lead in the conference trimmed by one due to that loss. Kentucky one game behind Auburn, and then one game behind Kentucky is now Arkansas and Tennessee. There's a couple of games tonight that are really big for bubble purposes, and Kentucky's got Florida this weekend. Tennessee's got Vanderbilt. But the big one, the rematch between Tennessee and Kentucky, is on Tuesday. That
oh,
is
yes,
significant.
It
I mean,
is.
The top four in the SEC right now are dangerously close, and that could be switched around by the time we have the same discussion next week.
Elijah, exactly. You said it perfectly. And I think we didn't mention a lot about Tennessee last week because they didn't have any their SEC schedule is obviously tough, but they were playing some of the lower teams in the SEC. And we talked about how this stretch of three games for Tennessee was pretty crucial just to get some wins and hopefully, you know, bump them up for seeding. Because right now I think they're probably sitting at like a four seed, would you say?
I have them at a three, but okay. They're really close. They luckily for them, they don't have any losses outside of the quadrant one, and that saves them.
Yes.
The win against Mississippi State on the road last night also contributed to that record, too. But they're really looking down the barrel of a 3-4 seed kind of deal right now, which isn't a bad spot, especially considering how bad the offense looked like a month ago.
Well, and considering just at the beginning of the season, we weren't really sure how this team was going to perform offensively because we didn't see a lot of him. But you can tell Kennedy Chandler's getting more comfortable. Thank God that when he grabbed his knee the other night, it was just a cramp and he wasn't injured.
That was the biggest win they had last night, was that it wasn't serious.
Yes, exactly, that it wasn't serious. But the last couple games for them, they had Texas A&M, beat them by 10. They had South Carolina. They beat them by a significant amount. And then they had Mississippi State. And then they have Vanderbilt this weekend in Knoxville. And then they have Kentucky. So we talked about this on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe made a good point. This is a really crucial time for Tennessee to pick up three solid wins. This was after the SEC Big 12 Challenge where they lost to Texas by one. That was a hard loss for them because they had that ending shot and it was set up perfectly. It just
really well drawn up. I loved how the play was actually drawn up. People want to knock on Rick Barnes, but I mean, I thought that was a really well drawn up play to get that look.
It's just got to go in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So they lost 51-52, kind of a low scoring game there, but then have been on a roll with the wins and they have Vanderbilt this weekend, and Vanderbilt has had a little bit of a turning point in this season. I mean, you never really think Just because of their past, they haven't been successful in the SEC. But having Liam Robbins back for the team, just having a 7-footer on the court size out there, and Quentin Malora Brown has really been aggressive in the paint and performing great for his skill level and for Vanderbilt. They were able to hold it close with Kentucky the other day. They beat LSU.
They're competitive. Yeah, and that win against LSU is the biggest win this program's had in like 5 years, easily.
Well, in that, what you just said, they're competitive, and they haven't been. Mm-hmm. They are competitive. I truly think that they're going to go into Knoxville on Saturday. I think it's going to be a close game.
They can easily make it close. And Rodney Chapman coming back and joining this team when he did has helped big time too, because that does, and I know Willie Donick on Darren Donick and Chase has noticed this really well, that when he came in, that takes a lot of pressure off of Scottie Pippen Jr. He's one of the highest usage players in all of college basketball, not just the SEC,
yep,
all of college basketball. And it allows him to take a little bit of pressure off, and some of that scoring burden isn't on him as much. Like, they didn't need Scottie Pippen Jr. to score 30 points to beat LSU.
Well, and that
they had a balanced scoring attack, and having Chapman, who's at least a threat to score, made that offense a little more complete. And that's just something they have not had the last several years. So it's one guy, usually, whether it be Scottie Pippen Jr. or Saben Lee, having to carry just an unnecessarily large burden for scoring.
Well, and that was my biggest takeaway from that LSU game, was that Scottie Pippen did not have to have 25 points, mm-hmm, 8 assists, and like 5 steals.
Yeah.
And
he had a pedestrian game when they still won.
And that is so important for Vanderbilt. If you can have other guys eat some of the cake too and be able to take some of the weight off of Scottie Pippen, you know, be able to get Liam some points, be able to get Quentin Malora Brown some points, it's really going to spread the wealth, and they're going to play like an actual team, because when you put all the work on the back of one player, you just can't expect them, even though Scottie Pippen Jr., I mean, the run he has had, and
at times last year he was winning some games single-handedly. Yeah.
Pretty incredible on his part, but I'm sure he's definitely happy that people are stepping up and giving him a little bit of help.
And that's a good testament to Jerry Stackhouse's strength as a coach. A lot of the talk is, because they struggled outside the win against Arkansas at the beginning of SEC play, they've taken their lumps this year too. I mean, they're 13-10, they're having a winning season, which would be something that, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, you have to be thrilled with, because success in this program isn't just going to happen overnight. Like, it takes program building, and it takes someone like Jerry Stackhouse, whose strength isn't recruiting. It might not be in-game adjustments, even though I feel like the sets they run are really good. I feel like they're a very well-coached team, but his strength is player development. I mean, this is the guy that, when he was in the G League, or coaching the Raptors G League team, developed Pascal Siakam from a G Leaguer to an NBA All-Star and a starter on a NBA championship team, and turned Fred VanVleet, to an undrafted guy from Wichita State, G Leaguer, into a valuable piece to that Raptors championship team. And now this year, Fred VanVleet has become an all-star. Like, those are two incredible examples of Jerry Stackhouse's strength as a coach, and that's player development. Quentin Melora-Brown didn't have these kind of games earlier in the season.
No, he didn't.
His development as a player is a lot of testament to the same type of development we saw with the Raptors G League players that would get called up to play in Toronto. And player development travels. Like, as a coach, it doesn't matter what level you're at, high school, college, NBA. If you can develop talent and develop players, you're going to be able to reach a certain level of success. And if they win just one more game, Michelle, in the conferences here, just one, they'll have six conference wins, which will be as much as they had in the last 3 years combined. That's progress.
Well, and jumping on the back of the development of Quentin Melora-Brown, he doesn't have anybody big to practice against.
No.
Liam Robbins wasn't even practicing, was in a boot for most of the year. We only just saw him start playing against Kentucky, which was, what, a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks mm-hmm. ago now? So, and he's the biggest guy on the team, and everybody else is nowhere near a five.
Yeah, I mean, he's the only center he has to play in games. So when he goes to the bench, you're playing a smaller lineup. Like, that's not an easy hand to be dealt.
And for him, I think his, you know, turning point game, at least for me watching him, was Kentucky. He was holding his own against Oscar Tshiebwe.
Playing physical, which is what you have to do against Kentucky, because if you don't and you show any signs of timidness or being soft, they will kill you. It's the best offensive rebounding team in the country. Oscar Tshiebwe will eat you alive if you show any signs of weakness or even just timidness on the basketball floor. And like there's growth. The fact that Vanderbilt didn't get run out of that gym, and
it's huge.
It's huge. And like the big, and a big test too will be Tennessee, because Tennessee's got a little bit of depth in the front court, a little bit. Tennessee's playing their best ball right now too. Both these teams weren't playing their best when they met last month at Memorial Gym. Now they're playing at a lot better, I would say more acceptable rate right now. So when they play in Thompson Bowling Arena on Saturday, it's going to be a lot more competitive, I feel like, than it was on a good side. I feel like both teams were kind of incompetent when they first met. It's going to be a different angle. We'll break down that and the Tennessee-Kentucky game on Tuesday, which will be the second game of the year in the SEC as opposed to the first Kentucky-Tennessee game. We'll break that down as you're listening to Courtside with Campbell Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. How fitting that we got our intro there from Jerry Stackhouse. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate the shout out there. Courtside with Campbell Knezovic live once again on ESPN 102.5 The Game as Curtis Blow brings us in, one of the greatest.
Hey, basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way you dribble up and down the court.
Oh, it's an all-timer. I love, so if anyone ever played NBA 2K, the year this was the intro song to the game, was the best, as you smack the microphone. It was something I do literally every time I'm in
the studio. To do the alley-oop move on that line. I was just telling you, Elijah, off air, when I worked for Syracuse women's basketball and would do the in-arena hosting, this was my pump-up song every single time I would drive to the Carrier Dome.
It's fitting.
Oh, it is so fitting. I get so excited when I hear it, and Like Mike is probably one of my all-time favorite childhood movies.
Oh, it's a great one. Yeah, it's one of those, and I think it's actually aged better than what a lot of people would admit that it's aged, but that's still a go-to for me. So many NBA cameos in that movie. Like, that movie is a blast from the past right there.
Oh, yeah.
And we mentioned before going to break, Kentucky-Tennessee playing again on Tuesday. Now, Tennessee is only one game behind Kentucky when these two teams met at Rupp Arena. Just last month, it wasn't close. Kentucky hung 107 points. Tennessee scored a lot of points, but still ended up losing by almost 30. It wasn't competitive for the most part. Michelle, Tennessee offensively has looked a whole lot better since that game. Kentucky has looked like world beaters since then as well. Like, I just know the only blemish was the loss to Auburn, but Auburn ended up becoming the number one team in the country, so it's a little excusable. But what do you think might be a little different? The game's going to be at Thompson Bowling Arena in Knoxville on Tuesday. It's going to be the game of the night in college basketball, and if Tennessee wins, they will have tied Kentucky for second in the SEC. And if you look at Tennessee's schedule, I mean, they have obviously Vanderbilt on Saturday. Then they go Kentucky, Arkansas, Missouri, Auburn, Georgia, Arkansas. So Arkansas twice, Auburn They have a chance to really not only create separation from Arkansas, who they're tied for third with right now, but to leapfrog Kentucky and Auburn. So it's a really big game on Tuesday. And, of course, with Tennessee playing Auburn as well, Kentucky, by beating Tennessee, puts himself in a really good position to win the SEC regular season as well. What are your expectations from that game, and what do you think, I guess, is sustainable from that first meeting for Kentucky, and what might not be as sustainable the second go-round?
Yeah, Kentucky fans, I hate to break it to you, but believe me, I am one. They're not going to beat them by, what, I think it was 28 or 30 again.
Yeah, they're not going to shoot 80% from the field, yeah. I don't think, again.
Them, that night, they could have beaten any team in college basketball. You just don't shoot like that. You don't have everybody on your team just making threes and basically anything that leaves their hand and just making it. But so I think we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier for Tennessee. These last couple games for them have been really important to get in the win column so that this next stretch of a little bit harder games, a little bit tougher games of these teams that are in the top of the SEC, so that they can be confident and feel together as a team heading into them, right? So they got the Texas A&M win. They got the Mississippi State win. Who did they just play?
They beat Mississippi State.
Mississippi State. South Carolina was in there. Mm-hmm. You got to get the win over Vanderbilt this weekend so that you can head into Tuesday just feeling very confident with your team. As far as what I think is going to be important for Tennessee, I think Zakai Ziegler is going to be a very important piece for this game. I think we saw the other night when Kennedy Chandler was out. I mean, Zakai Ziegler, he just got SEC Freshman of the Week. He played outstanding. I think heading into the season, you know, all the hype was around Kennedy Chandler, and he was really the face and the freshman and the star everybody was looking out for. But Zakai Ziegler has been, you know, just kind of trucking along and has been a really, really solid player for Tennessee. And I like what I've seen from him. So he's definitely going to be one that Kentucky's going to need to contain, put pressure on him, try to create some turnovers. As far as Kentucky, you know, this is probably not really good. I mean, it isn't really good news for the Cats. Cal said that Jacob Toppin hurt his ankle in the game the other night, and Cal said that it was an ankle sprain. So that's going to be a big loss for Kentucky. Mm-hmm. The benefit to this Wildcat team is that they do have a big bench, and they have a lot of players who can step up and be a role player for them. I think that's actually one of the biggest strengths for Kentucky is that they have about 9 guys who can really get in there and don't seem like they don't fit with the other 4 on the court. Mm-hmm. I think that the different rotation of players and the different lineups that Cal puts out there, this team just really looks cohesive. They're playing well together, but they're not going to shoot that well. That's just unrealistic to expect a team to be able to shoot that well. I mean, even after that, we haven't seen them shot like that because it was just a really good night for everyone, I guess.
Best possible night, yeah. Anytime you shoot, you have 70% from 2 and 60 from 3. Yeah. I think you're firing on all cylinders.
Exactly. I think Tennessee's obviously going to try to contain Oscar Tshiebwe. They're going to try to put pressure on Savar Wheeler, Ty Washington. They're not going to have Jacob Toppin, so Keon Brooks is going to have to step up even more. Davion Mintz has been a great player for them as of recent. He scored 0 in the Kansas game, and then since then has been making threes left and right. I think this is going to be a lot closer matchup than we think. It's also in Knoxville, so you're going to have that home court advantage. It's also hard to beat a team twice.
Yeah.
You know, Rick Barnes is a good coach. He's going to know how to structure his game plan differently coming into this. He's also been able to watch Kentucky now. They've had Tennessee also wasn't a – I feel like they weren't a complete team when they played
Kentucky. Offensively.
Exactly. And they had a good offensive game, but they have really figured out how to mesh together, and I think this is going to be a really good game we're going to see on Tuesday. I mean, obviously I'm biased. We all know I went to Kentucky. We all know I'm a Kentucky homer, but – that was my most unbiased.
That was a good unbiased, like, refreshing take. Because that's my favorite thing about this Kentucky team, too, is, like, their depth. I mean, you mentioned Davion Mintz not scoring at all against Kansas.
But it doesn't matter.
Hits, like, 3 or 4 threes against Vanderbilt and has been on a shooting tear since. Keon Brooks hadn't been a major contributor for this team. Kansas has to play a lot of minutes.
Yep.
Scores 27 points and carries them to a dominating win against a team that I have as a one seed in Kansas. Like, Kentucky's got that depth. And even with no Jacob Toppin, I think that like the team just like everyone steps up. It's everybody steps up. And here's the thing with Tennessee too. The last three games, Tennessee, after being an atrocious 3-point shooting team, is shot 41% from three in the last three. Josiah Jordan James shooting 8-for-17 over 40% in those three specifically. Almost had a caller. Someone who, if you called in, sorry, I'm manning the ship back here behind the glass. Feel free to call again. But my biggest thing in terms of the difference between Kentucky and Tennessee from then is Josiah Jordan James is playing some ball. I mean, it's taken him a little bit to figure some things out on the offensive side. However, he's 8-of-17 from three the last three games. It's not just Santiago Vescovi that is a 3-point threat now. Tennessee shot a lot of threes this entire year. It's the 3-point happiest team Rick Barnes has ever had. So they shoot a lot of threes, but they weren't making a lot of threes.
Nope.
A horrific 3-point shooting team. Well, they're three straight games of shooting over 40%, and that's because they're getting better looks and they're getting a little luckier. Sometimes
and more comfortable. Just more comfortable on the court, playing together.
Mm-hmm. And now it's not just like threes that Josiah Jordan James sitting too. He's hitting those threes, and now teams are over-closing out on him, and he's figuring out, hey, I can put the ball on the floor and get to the rim and get an even easier shot. Tennessee's done a lot better job of figuring that part of the offense out. They've always moved the ball well, 11th in the entire country in assist rate.
Yeah.
They always move the ball very well. It's always been a matter of actually finishing out possessions, and for the last three games, you are finally seeing Tennessee start to finish possessions that aren't just rushed Santiago Vescovi threes or I guess someone putting up a shot in the paint, a contested shot. Like the shots are getting better. They're actually making some of them, and they're finally creating some driving lanes because they're actually hitting some jumpers for the first time this season.
So they offensively are improving as the season goes on, and I'm going to bring up a team that we haven't spoken about once since we started, a Nate Oates team who really cannot mm-hmm. seem to figure it out offensively at the beginning of the year. I mean, they're coming off as the SEC winners last year. And now they started off really high, right? They beat mm-hmm. Gonzaga.
Have some incredible wins this year.
Incredible wins early in the season. But they've kind of faded into the background as conference play has been underway. And I think Auburn plays them this weekend.
They've already played Auburn. Auburn swept.
Oh, sorry, Arkansas. Yeah, Arkansas at Alabama.
That's significant.
It is.
Alabama's been, I guess, the Harvey Dent for all my Batman fans out there of SEC basketball because there's two sides to them. There's the Alabama team that beats Baylor. There's the Alabama
Gonzaga.
Team that beats Gonzaga. There's the Alabama team that
loses. Or did they lose to Georgia?
They did lose. They lost to Georgia and Missouri. So yep. there's two Alabamas here, and then goes to Memphis and gets throttled and lost to Davidson this year, which Davidson is a pretty solid team. Like they'll be in the NCAA tournament, whether
yes.
they win their conference or not. Like Davidson's in. So that's not a bad loss. And at the time, it was viewed a lot worse than what it is now. And this is also the same team that beat Houston at home. Houston is a team that's going to be a top four seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
They have incredible wins. They also have some of the most mind-blowing, absurd losses in college basketball as well. The consistency thing is what kills me with Alabama too, is because they have an identity of shooting a lot of threes, and they are just so much worse three-point shooting this year than they were last year. I mean, this is a team that, in terms of three-point rate, is 20th in all college basketball. Last year, they were up there at the top. Well, the reason they're not shooting maybe as much as last year, but still a ton, is because they ranked 283rd in the country in three-point shooting. They are atrocious when it comes to shooting beyond the three-point line. It's not necessarily their identity this year. They've had to change that identity as the season's gone on.
Well, it's hard when that's your game plan. That's what you lean on.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be able to be versatile. You got to be able to make you can't rely on the three, because even if you're the best shooter, even if you're a Devin Booker, you're going to have off nights.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot – like that's like last year they had like six players shoot at least 35% from three.
So you have options.
You had options. This year they only have one or two. I mean, Shackelford's shooting over that benchmark, but I don't think when I look at him now, Anybody else is shooting over that benchmark. And Keon Ellis is at 35%, but outside of him, Shackelford's at 37. No other player shoots over 35%. No other player, really, outside of Darius Miles, who's 33.9%, shoots over 33%.
Yeah. So when you have six players, okay, that's a reasonable game plan.
You can kill them from anywhere.
Whoever's feeling hot, put them in. If you're not, put them on the bench. Like, Nate Oates can rotate his players, but when you have two players shooting over 30% at the three, you only have two options.
You're predictable, and teams can scout you so much easier that way. And they're going to need better outside shooting, since that's what they lean on if they want to make it further. That or adjust and lean on some of the strengths like J.D. Davison, point guard, fantastic athletic ability, going to be playing ball in the NBA. Find him better ways to get to the rim and utilize that skill set. And I think there's some adjusting they have to do. And, I mean, they've shown they can do it because they have some of the more impressive wins in all of college basketball.
Still ranked 22nd. I just pulled up the AP polls right now, Alabama. And they're 15-9. I mean, a couple games over.
Yeah, the SEC record is what really kills them.
It's the SEC record. Obviously, the non-conference wins are going to boost them.
Massive.
Significant. I mean, Gonzaga's number one right now. Baylor's number seven. So those wins are obviously going to help them. The SEC record kills them, like you just said. But the SEC is also, I would argue, the most competitive basketball conference right now.
It's up there, yeah. I mean, they're every bit as competitive as the Big 12 and as every bit of the talent that the Big 12 and the Big 10 have. And so it's exciting to watch. That'll be a game to watch, Arkansas and Alabama on Saturday.
An early one, 11 a.m.
An early one. And if Arkansas loses, they lose ground in the SEC. So it's every bit as important as for Arkansas as it is for Alabama as they're fighting for tournament seeding position. But we got some games going on tonight. A big one here in Nashville at the Curb Events Center. Belmont trying to get revenge. I have a key from my conversation with Casey Alexander today. We have betting picks on Give and Go. So much more to come here as you're listening to Courtside with Kamel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's Courtside here with Kamel and Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. And we're about to break down some of the games that are happening tonight, not the ones that have already tipped off. Sorry, anyone looking for MTSU Old Dominion live bet options, which I believe they are tied. Michelle?
Tied at halftime. Just got the update.
Tied at halftime. That's a big one from MTSU. MTSU in position to make a little bit of noise in the Conference USA this year, something they haven't been able to say for the last several years. They've had it pretty rough, but a lot better year this year. Surprisingly good year for the Blue Raiders. But here in town at the Curb Events Center, Belmont facing off against Morehead State. Now, this is significant because Morehead State's the team that took out Belmont and kept them from going to the NCAA tournament last year. Belmont needing to get as many convincing wins in the OVC as possible because the OVC as a whole isn't very good. It's down, but the top of it's really good. Murray State's fantastic. Haven't lost the conference yet. Are running through the conference. They ran through Belmont when they came here. And also, the only other loss Belmont has outside of Murray State is Morehead State. So they're avenging a loss from this year. They're avenging the loss from the OVC championship game. And I talked to Coach Casey Alexander today, and I asked him, out of all, you know, the things that go into game planning and that go into what's going down tonight, and they tip off here in about 10 minutes, what's the biggest thing? What's the one thing that can keep the one thing that can make them upset Morehead State tonight? Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, nothing we've talked about so far. It's being active on the defensive end. I think we're very well prepared in the sense that we understand the multitude of their sets and what they're trying to accomplish and how we need to guard them. But it's not enough just to be in the right place. We've got to be more disruptive. We need deflections on that end of the floor. We need turnovers that lead to offense, easy offense for us. We didn't create a turnover the last time we played them until 15 minutes to go in the second half. And so we've got to change our mentality on that end of the floor.
Defense. This is a team that Belmont offensively has been great all year long. It's never been the problem. Not once has that been the problem all year long with this bunch, but he mentioned it. Because before that was the last question I asked him, but before that, we talked about offense, because that's where the strength on strength is. I mean, Morehead State's got one of the best two-point defenses in the country. Teams only shoot 45% from two when they play Morehead State. Belmont shoots 65% from two. That's second best in the entire country. It's a strength-on-strength match, Michelle, and what Coach Alexander was saying is that defense is going to be what controls this game.
And That's, I mean, we've been talking about that with Belmont pretty much since the beginning of the season when we covered one of their practices before the start of the season and just watching drills and just sitting in and kind of seeing how Casey ran the practice. Great offensive team. Great. Could make all the shots everywhere. But in that practice, you could tell that Casey really wanted to put an emphasis on the defense this year because your offense is only as good as your defense and vice versa. Because, yeah, you can shoot it out of the park, but what if the other team is? You got to stop them. You got to get forced turnovers. And then you got to have a lead so that you feel comfortable and the other team has to play catch up. You got to put pressure on them. Actually, I just told you before this, I was at Walgreens this afternoon getting some pictures developed, and I ran into Luke Smith, one of their grad guys on the team, been on Belmont for a couple of years now. He's actually going to be a
head coach at Knox Catholic next year.
High school head coach as he graduates this summer. I was talking to him about the game tonight. I was like, do you like weeknight games? I always wonder. I'm like, so, do you like weeknight games? We're just having a conversation. I met him a couple of times, interviewed him a couple of times. And he's like, yeah, I actually kind of do like them. And I was like, good luck tonight. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, we got to get this win over them. Like, you can tell it's a little bittersweet, right? Knocked them out of the tournament last year.
Beat them this year. Beat them last year at the end of the year at Morehead State.
Well, and it's crazy that these seniors on the team, like, they got to have another NCAA tournament appearance. Because what if they had one? They were supposed to go last year.
Supposed to go in 2020, but for obvious reasons, yeah. But went to one and was one play away, one great Maryland defensive play away from being in the second round.
Yeah. And, I mean, we've seen this team do great things. So hopefully that, hey, if you want to watch some college basketball tonight, head over to the Curb.
In my opinion, that's one of the best games in all of college basketball in terms of even strength and with serious conference implications, too. Belmont, I have right on the outside looking in of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And the next four out, they're in the group of eight that's right outside. And mostly because of that loss of Morehead State. That Morehead State loss does not look as bad if they can avenge it tonight. Belmont favored by 9.
So, yeah. Pretty big line, considering the
history.
The history of the matchup that we kind of recapped right there. But speaking of betting, we'd like to do a little segment at the end of the show, last segment called Give and Go. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to give you some betting picks. Elijah, it's my turn to throw out some college basketball and some NBA. Obviously, we only have a couple big college basketball games tonight because we're kind of at the end of the week. And then we're going to touch on – the lines aren't out for the weekend games yet, but we can touch on them, tell you what teams we kind of like.
The money line always makes money too.
Yeah, exactly. I was really sad. My parlay was just, you know, a couple points off, right?
Ooh,
UNC beat Clemson by 1 point. I was a little salty, and it was like the first game in it. And I was like, okay, well –
It ruins the rest of it.
But we're going to start in the NBA. The trade deadline just happened this afternoon.
A whole lot of stuff going on, yeah. Oh, God.
So if you are not updated on that, the big whole Ben Simmons saga, he is on the Nets now, and James Harden is on the Sixers now. So, I'm not surprised, but I am surprised just because this has been going on for Ben Simmons for so long. I thought he would have got traded by now. We'll see how that works out. Maybe he can help the Nets turn around a little bit because they've been struggling a little. Okay, so we're going to start New York, okay? New York Knicks versus the Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 9.5, Elijah.
Ooh.
That's going to be a 9-10 tip-off tonight.
Ooh, on the West Coast. The Warriors got dismantled last night by the Jazz, and they were good in that first half, and they just imploded in the second. Like, Steph Curry's struggling a little bit, but this Knicks team is gross. They are disgusting. I don't want to bet against the Knicks.
How are you going to disrespect Julius Randle like that?
Oh, Julius Randle's regressed a little bit. He's not happy there. No one's happy there. It seems like that nice little run last year was merely a flash in the pan. This Knicks team is disgusting. They traded for Cam Reddish, and he doesn't get more than 9 minutes a game. It's gross. I don't know what they're doing. 9 points is a lot, especially considering how bad the Warriors have struggled. However, the Warriors, I trust a little more than the New York Knicks. So, I'll go with that. The Warriors minus 9.
You'll take the Warriors on that one? You know what? Give me the Knicks on this one.
Okay, 9's a big number.
I think that the Warriors will end up winning. You know, it's home. It's in California. But I think the Knicks will be able to play a little scrappy enough. RJ Barrett will have a couple nice shots out there. Julius Randle we'll hopefully have a double-double. I say hopefully.
Yeah,
and you're laughing at me through the glass right now.
I've been fantasy basketball. I am very, very heavily invested in Julius Randle getting a double-double.
He yes. had, you know, he's like one of those one Kentucky players where it's like he's not having this insane career in the NBA and people are like, he's a failure, like the worst player ever.
He's made at least one All-Star game, so he has had a successful career.
Hey, he's still in the league, so I'm sure he's doing well for himself. Okay, Milwaukee Bucks. Oh, I'm really excited for this game. This is going to be a 9 o'clock one. Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns have been on fire.
Finals rematch.
Devin Booker is one of my obviously he's a Kentucky guy, but one of my favorite NBA players ever, and he was snubbed from the All-Star game again, and I'm very heated about that. I'm going to go first with this one. Give me the Phoenix Suns -3. Give me him on the money line. I love this matchup, but I think Devin Booker is going to shoot out of his mind tonight.
I'll go with that too, because the Bucks going off a back-to-back after just not back-to-back. They played the Lakers earlier on Tuesday and just absolutely dismantled them. But this Phoenix Suns team is, I mean, it's cliche to call the Suns red hot, but that's exactly what they are right now. They're the best clutch time team in the NBA by a large margin. And even without DeAndre Ayton, who's been hurt a lot this year, and he's back now, but this team has just proven that they're almost injury-proof, you know, like even if anyone goes down. Like they are a complete team, and they're the best team in the NBA right now, and I think by a little bit. I like them to get that revenge win tonight.
I would love to see that revenge win. They were playing the Bulls the other night, and the Bulls are one of the top teams in the East, and they were handling them.
Yeah.
And Devin Booker wasn't even at stretches of the game. I'm like, where's Devin Booker? He's not even playing. So they've definitely got a deep bench. Okay, now we're going to switch over to a little college basketball. One of the games I'm looking forward to tonight, Purdue-Michigan. Purdue's favored by 3.5. We talked last week, is Michigan one of the biggest disappointments in college basketball this year? We said Memphis and Michigan were two top teams where they had really high expectations and kind of have just fell flat this year. Purdue has, they've been the number one team in the country. They kind of they lost to Rutgers then after that, but then have been producing wins.
Best they offense in college basketball.
Exactly. They are favored by 3.5. This is a tough one just because, you know, the two teams know each other. Even though Michigan hasn't had a very promising big season and Purdue's been rolling right now, it is college basketball, you don't know. But I am going to give Purdue the slight edge. I'm going to give them at -3.5. Elijah, what are you thinking?
Oof, that's tough. Just because all the games Purdue's dropped have been on the road. I do think there is a formula to beating Michigan. I think most teams have picked up on that. Michigan's going to be desperate because they need a win against Purdue to solidify a spot in the tournament. They are a fringe bubble team, but I will go Michigan +4. I think Purdue wins on the money line, but I think Michigan, or it's +3.5. Yeah, I think Michigan will cover. I think it's going to be close, but Purdue gets that
slight edge. Okay, and lastly, really quick, got a West Coast game. Gonzaga versus Pacific. Gonzaga is favored by 31.5. I saw this line and was like,
God.
Whoa, that is, I mean, listen, I know Gonzaga is the number one team in the country, and I know that Vegas knows things that we don't, but that line is far too big. I will take Pacific on this one.
I'll take Gonzaga. They're beating their opponents in the WCC by a historic 29.9 points per game. Pacific's one of the worst teams.
Fighting
Michael Olowokandis or don't have enough in the arsenal. As big as that spread is, I'll take Gonzaga and the points.
And the points. Okay. Listen, that is, I know, and they don't have a lot of competition in their conference, but I don't know.
Dangerous.
Watch them beat them by like 40 tonight.
They're dangerous. That was Give and Go. And of course, Michelle, another fantastic episode. A lot of basketball to get going. Next week, we'll break down Kentucky, Tennessee. We'll get into the bubble a little bit as our march towards March continues. We'll be back. We'll do it same time next week here in Courtside. Campbell Knezovic, ESPN 102.5 The Game.